Hello, I am Isawellen, and this is Isawellen Writes Grown-Up Storytime, the podcast where I read my current works in progress, as well as from other selections, and we also have a little bit of chit-chat and wine time about the writing process and books that I love. Thank you so much for joining me today. Hello, everyone. I want to thank you so much for going out and buying Choosing Her Alpha, for getting it on your Kindle Unlimited, and putting me in the top 10, top 500, between top 500 and 600, and then it comes up and you end up in the top 10 with your orange flag or not. I woke up this morning, I didn't have one, but I was still like number two or number three, so thank you so much. I want to thank the amazing Wattpad readers. You guys are my tribe. You're my peeps, and I love you. I mean, I really do. I love you for your feedback. I love you for your honesty. I love you for reaching out to me. I love you for the way you read the books when I put them up. I appreciate you. I don't want you to think for one minute that I take you for granted. You're amazing, and I brag on you wherever I go. I don't care what anybody says. You guys are fantastic. The other thing I wanted to do is let you know that if you wanted to come on and chat with me personally, if you're a reader, or if you're a writer and you want to read something that I have read or something that you have written, I would love to, or an audio person, and you'd love to come on and just reach a small audience, a small but growing audience. I know I'm growing because there is a website that tracks, and for advertising, that I got some emails and said, oh, you've reached a plateau. Would you like to advertise? And I said, yes, we'll see how that goes. But so I know I must be growing if I'm attracting people who want to sell stuff. And I'd love to have you. I'd love to talk. There's nobody I won't talk to. If you are a person and you are kind, and reasonably sane. I mean, let's face it, I'm pretty nutty. So I would so love to have you. There are so many personalities on Twitter that I have met that I would love. Oh my goodness. Come into my abode. Let's chat. That I would love to have, and Facebook. And so just message me one way or another. You can message me on the Podbean app. You can message me on Twitter. You can send me an email at isawellen.writes@gmail.com. Yeah, I want to make myself available to you. I am doing this writing thing. People say, if you could stay home full time and write, well, you know, it's poverty / writing. I'm doing it one way or another, and we are making it work in my household. It's a little tight, but we are making it work. I have my Folgers coffee. Thank you very much for asking. And we are good. And I do not go to the, good Lord, I love those Frappuccino thing. Mixed Iced Dutch Brothers here is a local place that they have. And they are like $8? Of course, they're huge. They are massive. But $8? That's like four meals. Anyway, so yeah, we're avoiding those treats. But I'm going to read today Calyx. I haven't read it before. I mean, I haven't prepped very well, but I'm going to try and read Calyx chapter 16. I need to check my time. Okay, I believe I have time. I should be able to get this read in half an hour. If you'd love to come on and, like I said, read your work, you are welcome. Read one of my sex scenes. I'd love to have you. Have me write one specifically for you to come on and read. Even better. So just let me know. Contact me. Listeners, if you're enjoying this, like, share, subscribe, yada, yada, yada. Put it on Facebook. Tell your neighbor. Tell your mother-in-law. I dare you. Have I told my mother-in-law? No, she's passed on. No. Hey, I did tell one person. I outed myself. There is one person in the world who now knows the real Isawellen. And the preschool teacher as well. He and don't kid yourself, he turned my face so red, and we were talking on the phone. Had me laughing so hard. He is a terrible, I made him promise, don't tease me. And within three sentences, he was teasing me because that's just who he is. And I love him. So, all right. Let's read Calyx's Point of View, Chapter 16. The alcohol smelled like cow piss here, one step above the water, with about as much kick. Since the alcohol was worthless, Calyx debated the option of violence to let out some of the frustration itching under his skin. Unfortunately, he'd counted six union badges since he'd been in this shithole, six men whose attention he did not want. He sat at the ramshackle bar across from the boarding house where they'd spent a wasted night. Not even midday, and the heat and light of this dirt pit corner of hell was making his blood boil. He was a son of the north, of snow, rain, and forest. He could not think of one thing about this fucking desert to recommend it. Why did people live here? Resources were scarce, and the sun never stopped. He had thought New Indio a ramshackle little mess of forgotten nothingness the first time he saw it, but it was a shining example of prosperity compared to the town he currently found himself stuck in. Stuck, and every word from home was worse than the last. He just barely kept himself from destroying his handheld after talking to Tunio. The last few days, every time Tunio called, it was with something worse. On the same day he caught his prey, he got a call about a break-in attempt and Anya walking off into the forest. And today, her stepsister found dead, murdered. He breathed out a breath, inhaled, controlled his aggression, the need to leave this place and get back home, pumped up with anger, walking the edge of sanity. The hunt was technically finished, but now he had to wait on the favor giver's little payment. She had not endured her forced journey well. After cutting off the head of her husband's head, the woman had hobbled over and spit on the dead man before collapsing into a faint. Hot with fever, thin and bony, face and arms bruised, the feisty little witch appeared to be in terrible condition. Calyx regretted not removing the contract breaker's cock before taking his head off. Instead of leaving yesterday, they had to stay another night for the woman. He tried not to hate her for it, leaving her for the doctor, Max engaged, so he didn't do something stupid to her. He needed to get home. Tunio had told him Berdana's death was a setup, a manufactured crime scene created to look like abuse from a drunken client. Tunio knew union tactics. There was a tint to the girl's skin after death and blackened fingernail beds that came from an old torture device. They had feedback from their own life. They had used feedback from her own life energy to kill her. She had suffered hours of other kinds of vicious abuse, left on the floor of one of Jack's clients' rooms like garbage, a true mark of the null idea of unification. No one knew anything about her last client. New India wasn't a huge place. The locals knew of each other, even if they weren't on first-name basis. Regulars came through on the road to different places. Strangers were not uncommon, but not so constant that they wouldn't be noticed talking to Jack's freshest stripper. Jack wasn't protective of his workers, but he did protect his income, and Bredonna was a moneymaker. He kept an eye on her. The day after her death, he couldn't even remember who she'd been with. The event had the whole town angry, looking for answers. It was the work of a mage, and it had to do with Anya. Calyx was sure of it. He told Tunio to send a man to Stahl. The man was gone, his shop closed up. Signing his death warrant, Calyx decided. They sent a hound to watch Berdana, and the hound had left her after her murder. There'd be answers with the beast that Seven would help him uncover. Instead of going back to Argus House, however, the hound had disappeared. Calyx had every reason to believe Noxpaw had chased after Anya. He should find it reassuring that wherever she was, she had two hellhounds to protect her. Instead, the prospect was frightening. She'd proven she wouldn't hesitate to use the hounds to her best advantage. Time had become his enemy. Union fucking soldiers at his back door. Since the last attempt, the trespassers had been killed, taking blasts to their chests the moment the guards saw them. This time, they had two survivors. Tunio had been gagging when he spoke of Shade eating the gnoll and the mage, as much from knowing that a witch had ordered it as from seeing it happen. The little witch had told Shade to kill the two men, and she herself had wounded a third. Then, Tunio told him, the fear evident in his voice, when he had tried to catch Anya to take her back to the house, a demon leapt out of her, nearly biting Tunio's face off. Not a soldier given to exaggeration, Calyx knew something dangerous had happened. Her magic sounded out of control. And he was in the desert. The gnolls all had Union weapons. The survivors said they were on an information-seeking mission. It was probably true. They were lower ranks, grunts. The Union forces had no problems with sacrificing the lives of their own, sending them into situations without all the information, without firepower, without skill, to deal with an enemy to test the enemy's defenses. Since those four wouldn't be going back where they came from, just like the last three, whoever had sent them now knew that Calyx was protecting his secrets and killing whoever tried to steal them. Twice a day, sometimes three, Anya still blasted him with a wave of runoff power that stole his breath and made him spill in his pants. Not that his cock wasn't hard and leaking already. He hadn't known it was possible to be so aware of a woman and be weeks away from her on a different continent. After the kitchen disaster, she had kept to herself, had gotten some books from Andrews. Everything was fine until the break-in attempt, and she disappeared into the forest. She just disappeared, as if she had shaped her own magic, created her own charm, and used it. He told himself he would no longer be surprised by anything the girl was capable of. Then he'd get a message of her doing something else impossible. He could hunt her, find her. But where had she gone? What was she doing? Why had she left the safety of his shields? He was going to spank her ass red and then spank it again after he got his answers. Did she not realize the risk? Should Union forces catch her, there would be no mercy. The things they would do to her. She couldn't know what had happened to her stepsister. The thought of it made his gut twist. She would suffer like Berdana and worse. It wouldn't be one night. They'd take her to the bowels of Eusidio and do every fucking evil thing they could dream up. Rapes and beatings, harvesting her magic. And he could do nothing. As trapped by his commitment to Sebastian Rabanus as he was stuck in a Union cell. He stood up from his seat when he saw Max enter the room. While the hellhounds hated the sun of this place, Max loved it. He soaked it up like a sponge, often going shirtless and wearing only his gear harness so that he could get more of it on his skin. He drew attention wherever he went, and it pissed Calyx off. Everything pissed him off. "You hear from Tunio?" Max asked, seeing the communicator in Calyx's hand. "More bad news. We need to leave." Max frowned. "The doctor says what the woman needs most is rest. Fuck that. What else? He gave her some potions. She's not sick. She's weak and pregnant." Calyx had nothing but swear words for that. The fever? Magic overdraw. It was her husband. And now the baby pulling on her reserves, I think. Doc said sometimes there's an adjustment. Her husband took too much and the baby takes a little and she's not from here. The magic isn't, I don't know. She can't replenish as well as, or some shit. She's a well with no water for priming. If we have to carry her out of here, then we're going to fucking carry her out of here. I want to find a skiff then. Any ideas? If she can't draw here, it's the best thing anyway. Maybe the water crossing will suit her better. Max shook his head and Calyx wanted to take it off his shoulders for doing it. He was not in the mood for discussions. Can't take a sick pregnant woman by water, man. We need to go by air. And Doc says at least another day of rest and food. She's barely conscious. Where would we find a skiff in this town? These people are one step above full functioning gnoll. They even have windmills. windmills and no wind. Someone will have what we need. Someone always does. We need to get back. We can't wait for a pregnant woman to feel good. Sebastian Rabanus couldn't come get her. The man was bound to his city. Calix couldn't leave her with Max or Gage, his personal retrieval part of his contract. Who do you think is the father of Midge's baby? Max asked. Midge, our beat-up sugar girl, not ours. Calix had trouble not raising his voice out of an angry growl. Right. Do you think it was that bastard or the favor giver? Don't know, don't care, not part of the job. Ah, she's a sweet thing, though. Why do you think that we aren't keeping her? I didn't ask. You were thinking. And you are not going to fuck her or fuck with her, either. Hands off, she's a job. Calix liked to fuck. It was the best way on earth to power up and release pent-up tension at the same time. The only way. But Max adored women. His protective instincts always drove him hard. He'd have his own harem of bitches if he could. Opposite of hellhounds, who had a matriarchy, Max's shifter drove him to keep a brood of females. Since he was alone and not head of his own pack, he just sank his dick into anything with two legs that would accept him. Fine, not her. What did Tunio say about your girl? He caught Max up to speed on the last call from home, watching his friend's teeth spike when he told him of the newest information about Bradonna. Shit, you should have let us bring her home. She was a sweet girl. He eyed him with blame. She was a jealous, conniving bitch who was going to try and sell her little sister to the highest bidder, Calix retorted. Well, now she's dead, and that's a fucking waste. Max spat on the ground in disgust. Your girl will be fine. The hounds are with her. You know it. They will die before anything touches her. Calix glared at Max. You're worried another mage might be able to find her? That the Union knows about her now? Anything can find her. Now that she's not hiding, anything can find her. Then they know. You bet their ass they already know, Calix. You know how people are. Information is credit. Someone said something. Calix lifted his eyebrow at Max. Someone? More like Bradonna. I'll know for sure when I get my lost hound back. Calix thought the stepsister had gone looking to sell information and found a buyer that didn't care to hand over any credit. That buyer was still out there. The Union was every Indonesian's enemy. They manipulated and lied. Only a fool got into bed with them. I have to assume they know Anya exists, as of right now. I don't think anyone knows what she can do, that she's newborn. No one saw her with the hellhound. No one who saw her with the hellhounds got away. But the girl grew up in that town. It's enough whose daughter she is. Noelle Devine had a powerful charm on her, one that hid them, Andrews told me. That woman would have been wanted by the Union. Yet she just left her family, every connection behind, and set up a life in New India with her daughter. Have you ever heard of something like that happening? Never. Fucking never. Noelle de Vive would have had a husband, two, three mages at least, and an old controller to keep an eye on all of them. A job since she got her powers. Every member of her family under Union control, just to keep her in line, Max added. Anya, she is on the list now. They are out looking. She responds, sends one of them hounds after them, and they see what they can do. She can do. The Proctus tomorrow will go to war to get her. Fucking monsters, Max growled, his dog showing. Calix knew he wasn't worried about Anya as much as he was remembering his own experiences. Long ago, shifters had lived in scattered tribes through the mountains, but the null greed for magic had decimated their numbers. Calix knew that the drive to equalize humanity had started with the Proctus's father. He'd been some kind of entertainer with a charismatic personality and a believable face, running a playhouse. On the weekends, his troupe of performers entertained people and made them laugh. During the week, he gave speeches about mage oppression and witch whores. He was the one who spread the idea that non-magical humans had been cheated of their rights. At some point, he made an alliance with a wealthy man, a few mages among them who were hungry for more power. One man, tapping into no fears, fanning the flame into hate and bigotry until it blossomed into war over who and how to control magic. It was all history now. how they created the Union, started a war, trapped an ancient. Their ignorance and lust for magic, they were not physically capable of manage, had backfired them. The power they wanted slipping through their fingers. Their methodology killed magical creatures and strangled the native-born. Magic was now disappearing. Or rather, all humans were losing access to it. Balance had been disrupted. The ancients were the heart of everything in Irindario. Where an ancient lived, magic thrived. Earth, water, air, fire, and magic. The gnolls had been born and bred in a land without an ancient at its core. Records said they'd lost their land. It had crumbled beneath their feet, and then they had come to Irindaro. Calyx wished that whatever had destroyed their land would have taken them with it. Sitting at the ramshackle table, his beer untouched, he watched two gnoll men walk into the bar. They had the pole scanner set up, their kind used to look for magic. Max bristled, and Calyx's arm shot out, his hand over the silver ring on Max's wrist cuff. This is what they did. Not all of them. Men like Gage and Tunio understood who they were in the world, accepted their no flesh, reveled in it. But men like this, scroungers, had let envy twist them up and pervert their minds. They had lost their understanding when they soaked in Proctus Tamar's lies, lost their balance. He watched the Union version of equality walk into the room in unwashed desert cake clothes. Magic scroungers. Two men, square and earthly, faces lined with their life experiences. Calyx noticed their lack of badges. Didn't mean there weren't soldiers. They could be. They had the look of veterans, the swagger of victors, as they went up to the bar to talk to the tender there. One man's eyes swept the room. Calyx, Max, a drunk in the corner who looked like a part of the furniture, and another skinny man sitting at a table and looking at his empty glass like it was suddenly going to fill itself. The scavenger leaned forward, asked the barman a question. Calyx didn't hear the question, but Max could. Shit, they are looking for word about strangers in a town. A spit and a sugar piece. Bet they are looking for our contact. Calyx didn't answer. He doubted that anyone had fallen the contact breaker all the way from Usidio. But these last few years, magic hunters had grown bold. He remembered a time when gnolls had a healthy respect for the power of a married pair. No longer. A third gnoll, this one dressed in a cleaner shirt, with a shiny little Union badge over his heart, joined the other two. Magic said nothing, but Calyx could feel the tension run through him. Men like these had destroyed shifter kind. Max craved revenge. Calyx wouldn't mind a taste himself, but the third badge wasn't one of the six he'd already seen walking through this town. Was there an outpost or an office here? In the middle of nowhere, this armpit sprang up around an old oasis well? He thought it a ramshackle stop before the bigger stone-built cities were where there were underground water for farming. They needed to leave. He didn't doubt his ability to deal with an outpost of Union soldiers, but that kind of blood spatter would turn eyes on him that he had paid dearly to look the other way. He had a legal hunt contract. No laws were supposed to abide by them, since they used them so often themselves. But no arrogance wasn't unknown for making decisions based in greed. The man holding the pole, a long-range scanner, left the group, walking over to the drunk in the corner. Since their machinery wasn't finding them what they wanted, they'd do it the old-fashioned way, with questions and intimidation. Calyx watched the conversation. Max supplied the information. He's asking about them. He comes over here, I'm going to tear out his throat. These guys smell all kind of evil, old blood and decaying meat. Cannibals. They'd crossed gnolls like that before, who ate magical creatures with the belief it would make them live longer. You kill these ones, their friends will come after us and find the pregnant woman. You think she's strong enough for the crossfire? Max made a noise in his throat. His hand over Max's wrist, connecting with the metal rings and the magic there, Calyx waited for his friend to get a hold of himself. You don't smell what I smell, Max said. She could be killed. We'll be distracted. have to leave in the day without the hounds. These men don't deserve to breathe, but you attack now, you risk innocence. They aren't the only Union forces in this town, Kallax reasoned with him. The man went to the next table, kicked it to get the guy's attention. He hasn't said their names yet. They just know it's a mage and a witch, Max said. The contract crossed their paths, got their notice. We don't want their notice. Got enough shit on our plate, Max, right? He shot Max with a sting of magic, an electric shock that hurt and made the other man catch his breath. His eyes flickered and skin paled. Physically, they were equals, but magically, especially filled up with his witch's energy, Max was just a puppy who'd had to do the alpha's bidding. He struggled with his emotions, but by the time the gnoll came to their table, he had a handle on it. Well, don't you two fuckers look like a pair of out-of-towners? What are you doing here in Brackenzir? Is that the name of this town? Kallax asked. We are just seeing the sights, of course, enjoying the weather. The gnoll looked them over. One hand still on Max's wrist, he noted the connection with the quizzical twist on his mouth, but didn't say anything. Kallax knew what he thought. It didn't matter. As much beast as man touched ground at Max. He needed it now, so Kallax would do it. Where are you headed? Got business in the next city, Kallax said shortly. You see any other travelers on the road? I'm looking for some outlier native spunk. I haven't seen any since I got here. The place is dead. I'll need a charge for my gear. You know where I can do that? As you said, dead. Fuckers are hiding and hoarding the energy. You see one, you come tell us and we'll harvest it, pay you with a charge. Otherwise, you better have enough to get to the Stone Cities or you'll be walking. The men gave them another thorough once-over. Kallax doubted he was the kind to miss obvious details. If he'd had a good look at the mage and wife, he'd know they'd come from the north. Just like Kallax and Max. The two of them were armed up like mercenaries. Kallax kept his mage belt tucked away, but the guns and sword, matching what Max wore, marked them. Nothing said men couldn't walk around where they wanted, geared up for battle like it would break out any moment. Union law outside their big cities were lax when it came to trivial things like murder and thievery. Towns like Brackenzir had to patrol and protect themselves from dangerous men. Just as the Union forces protected themselves, they did as they wished. They took what they wanted and protected their own. This man wasn't going to forget seeing Kallax and Max seated at the table in a bar or the threat they posed. They'd caught their eye now. They needed to get out of this fucking town. Under the guise of looking for a charge, Kallax and Max went to the door-to-door searching for a way to travel with Robonis's woman. A sleep pod or a med-bed skiff would be the best way, since either of the machines would allow her to lay flat and keep her comfortable. But uncomfortable was better than dead, and Kallax was willing to settle for anything that would allow them to move overland at the same speed as its hunting party. The people they talked to were suspicious and unwelcoming, and he had credit to make them friendly and receptive. They needn't have bothered. The doctor had what he wanted after all. It was old, unpowered, and missing its anilium core, but it would do. He and Gage worked on it till they could get it off the ground and in a proper float with the internal air running. Most of the other systems didn't work, but the girl could breathe and not cook in the bed. That was good enough for him. They left the town in 2 hours before dawn, running from the sun. Moving until Seven took her pack to ground, they made camp in the middle of nowhere. No trees, endless rocky, sandy soil, a thorny brush surrounding them. Gage, check if the woman needs anything. I can do it, Max offered. Kallax scowled at him. Help me with my tent. Gage opened the lid to the med skiff and helped the woman out so she could relieve herself. Still weak, Kallax watched her lean on her friend. Pregnant, with that fever, there was no choice but play nursemaid. He wondered who she was to Robonis. If it were anyone else, Kallax might think she was just another female, lost to the man's game as a pawn. The favor giver definitely played games, but usually only with deceiving women. She didn't look that type. Maybe in other circumstances she could be manipulative and selfish, but he doubted it. She said please and thank you and wouldn't meet anyone's eyes. Past the first dawn of youth, an adult woman in every way. She had pale blue-gray hair that curled at her bony shoulders and around her face thinned with stress. She was pretty, the native-born always were, shaped by the magic bloodline, but she was tired. The union had messed with her life. There was no place in the desert for her to be modest, and she was too weak for it. They all turned their backs while she found a place to squat. Max took her something to use to wipe her hands and face. The shifter smelled her fragility and pregnancy, all his instincts aroused by her. Calix decided to keep the woman's bed in his own tent. She didn't have the strength to be up for long. Gage pressed food and water on her, tried to gently flirt, and from what Calix could see, she didn't have the energy for a smile. But she was better than the day before. She was conscious. She was in his tent before he was. He went to close the lid of the medical skiff. She raised a pale hand. "Can you not? You'll be cooler with it closed." "I know, but the smell." Her voice was soft with the city accent. "Fine." As he undressed down to his base clothes, he heard her small gasp. "It will get hot," he told her. Even weak, the magic called a glow from her. He'd have to be careful, not looking anything like an Indonesian. Most gnolls assumed he wasn't. It gave him an advantage. The witch would give him away with her come-hither glow. "I don't have anything to give," she said on the defensive. "You don't have anything I want," she gasped again. Prickly little thing, insulted likely. He arranged his bed, checking his weapons again, and sat down, slurping at his water. Now would be a good time for sleeping, but he wasn't sleepy at all. "Where are you taking me?" She lay down in her transport, hidden in the belly of it, voice muffled, but he heard her fine. She sounded like a woman who wanted nothing more than to sleep and never wake up, but had to keep talking and asking questions, just out of duty. If she was going to ask, Calix had some of his own. "That weasel your only husband, or are there others in a controller waiting for you?" She answered after a moment, as if she had to work up to it. Calix listened hard. He was no truth-teller, and didn't know if she was one of those witches who couldn't lie. Not that she wouldn't be kept from finding a creative way around the truth, like Anya had. "The Union took Grayson and Mackie for treason. I don't know where Norton is." "Were you running from the forces?" "No, I mean, not until Eric decided to leave Yesidio." "Where are you taking me? Back to Norton? Norton, your controller?" "Yes." "You didn't know Eric Swan before a contract?" "You didn't know Eric Swan broke a contract?" He heard a short, bitter sound. No, she hadn't known anything about anything. Used as a battery and a fuck toy then. "I'm taking you to Sebastian Rabanus." She inhaled, said nothing else. Calix lay down on his with his call box in his hand. Not that he expected good news from home. No, that would just be too much, wouldn't it? And that is chapter 16. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm going to leave you here. If you've noticed some like weirdness in that, I had to edit quite a bit. I should have read it through, and I should have edited it before I read it. But this is Isawellen's very comfortable, non-professional, make as little effort as possible podcast. Just me chatting with you on my kid's microphone. And I'm so glad that you take the time to join me and put up with me. Have a fantastic day.